Hello and welcome to the SEAI's 180 Degrees podcast. I'm your host, Sinead Ryan, and over the course of the next 12 episodes, I'll be joined by special guests to talk about the state of play of Ireland's energy revolution, how we can be smarter energy users, what renewable technologies are coming into our homes and communities, and how small businesses can benefit from decarbonising now. Welcome to episode 10 of the SEAI's 180 Degrees podcast. I'm Sinead Ryan. And now we've heard of smart products for our homes and the concept of the Internet of Things, where our home appliances and apps communicate with each other to find the right product or the ideal music to play or turn your lighting up and down or your heating on and off when you're on your way home. But are we going to have the same use of options for our home energy use? Enter the realm of smart grids and smart networks, a technological landscape where the smart grid, an advanced electricity network, facilitates seamless communication between electricity generators and their users. The intricate web ensures optimal balance in meeting electricity demands for household activities like washing, cleaning, charging, and beyond. So picture this: wind turbines engaging in a sophisticated dialogue with everyday appliances, turning your home into a synchronized hub of energy efficiency. Well, to explain all of this, I am joined again by Fergus Sharkey, Head of Business and Transport at SEAI, and Chloe Kinsella, Managing Director of Senergize, an energy trading and services company in Dublin. Welcome, Chloe. Welcome back, Fergus.
Thanks, mate.
Now, we are going to have to start, I think, with the top level view here, Fergus, because this can sound a little bit futuristic to people. And if I can say, tiny bit worrisome, everything talking to each other and maybe the human being in the middle left wondering what's going on. So talk to me about what is a smart grid.
There's probably technical definitions, but we'll try and keep it as concise as we can. So our electricity system, our electricity grid, is made up of generators providing electricity, the wires and cables that bring it to our home, and then the systems that operate that and kind of balance out supply and demand. And that's changing, radically changing at the moment. It's changed over the last 20 years, and it's going to change unrecognizably in the next 20 years. And we're ending up with a very different system. So we're ending up moving from a lot of what people would understand to be centralized power stations. We had a small number of those, and they could respond to energy, electricity demand when it arose. And now we're moving towards a more renewable electricity system that's made up of hundreds of small wind farms and solar farms and thousands of solar panels on people's homes and businesses. And that's a much more complex system. And how we balance that will require a much more sophisticated approach to our electricity network. And that's where the smart element comes in.
So when people are thinking of all the different elements involved with renewables, because happily we can get renewables from lots and lots of different sources, from the ground, the air, the sea, the wind, roofs, is it just that there's so many more sources and to join them up is really, really a kind of a big challenge logistically?
Yeah, I think there's that is true. And I think there's two big things, I suppose, at a high level that we need to think about. So one is the classic, well, it's not always windy and it's not always sunny. Mm. So we have this, I suppose, weather-dependent renewable system that has to be backed up when the renewables aren't there. And that can come from energy storage, conventional power generation, which comes from fossil fuels, or interconnection to the UK or mainland Europe. So all of these solutions are kind of out there. And then the second element, which is really where the smartness kind of benefits consumers, is because of that, there's a very dynamic cost of electricity. If you have a lot of renewable energy and low demand, then you have an excess of renewable energy and the cost will be low. But conversely, if you don't have a lot of renewable energy and you have a lot of demand, so you'll have seen these occasions during the winter where, you know, you see things like amber alerts coming from EirGrid. And that's where the conventional power generation is being relied upon and is under pressure. So that's during those periods, electricity would be very expensive. So you get this pricing dynamic happening. And that's a really, really important thing that people can tap into with smart enabled products in their home and with different approaches to using electricity.
And I suppose the ideal then from a kind of an umbrella viewpoint is that this should all be seamless. I mean, individuals shouldn't have to worry anymore, perhaps, that it's windy or it's not windy or it's sunny or it's dark, that there's an underlying structure that means that all of this is being handled and to ensure the consumer the best price. And indeed, that transfer, it's concentrated on renewables rather than fossil fuels.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the important transition that we're going through is we're moving from a place where we only had to control a small number of power stations and demand was sort of, it happened when it happened and you could predict it to an extent. You know, at 5 o'clock, people start their dinner. You know, at halftime in a match, people are going to make a cup of tea. All of that can be seen on the electricity system. And that was kind of a very old school of thinking. And we're moving from that sort of small number of moving pieces to an entire orchestra of tens of thousands of things. So a simple analogy that people might get is we now have, you know, at the time of this recording, we've probably about 120,000 electric vehicles on the road. If they all plugged in at the exact same time to charge, that's a major problem. So suddenly you have, you know, you could have 400 or 500 megawatts of power, which it could be like 10% of your demand just coming on at once. And that's this type of challenge that happens when you've all this distributed electricity demand and generation that has to be balanced out.
Well, let me move to Chloe now, because Chloe, you're the kind of the puppet master here. So there's a jigsaw of moving parts among all of this. And as Fergus said, there is a juggling act to play. There's a pricing issue to play. And this is what you do as an energy trader. Now, I'm not sure that job existed when I was leaving school. So tell me a little bit about what it is and how you do it.
So at the moment, there's a separate price for electricity every 30 minutes. Okay, so every 30 minutes at the moment in the wholesale market, there's a separate price. And how that's determined is based on what power plants make up running that demand. So if it all can be met by wind, the price would be zero. But if the last megawatt had to be met by a gas plant, gas would set the price. So effectively, we would forecast what power plants need to meet demand and then forecast the price. And it's every half an hour it's changing. So it's really dynamic. And if we look at previous to smart meters, you got somebody coming over to your house and taking a meter reading every 2 months, but they didn't know when you consumed the power. They just took a meter read. So they'd no idea in what half hour you consumed that power. So even though it might be helpful for you to turn down the power at certain times to help the system, the grid didn't know when you consumed it. So the great thing about smart meters is now they can actually read in each half hour when you consume the power. And then the consumer can, or the domestic consumer can actually help the system to try and balance the grid. So that's what makes it interesting.
So in taking the guesswork out of it then, you know, the forecasting element, you can actually see in real time what people are using when, why they're using it, and maybe then go and source the cheapest form of energy to provide that. Is that it?
Exactly it. Because like if there's excess wind on the system, so let's say there's more wind on the system than demand, what you'd really like is everybody plug in their EVs, use that spare wind as opposed to turning off the wind, which happens currently. So it's use everything to its fullest so we get as much renewables on the system as possible. And then let's say there's no wind on the system, tell people to turn, not plug in their EVs or shift their demand to try and help the system. So we've huge amounts of renewables in the system. It's to use them optimally.
So Chloe, it seems to me we Irish already have an obsession with the weather.
Yeah.
Is this now going to feed into our Met Éireann reports and, you know, it tie in with what we already kind of look out the window? Is it good drying weather? Now it's going to be, is it good EV charging weather?
Totally. All we do is look at the weather, to be honest. And what's interesting is actually a storm you think would be brilliant, loads of wind. And actually in the latest storm, the Isha storm, they turned off the wind turbine. So the wind was lower than we expected because of cutout speeds. But yeah, we're obsessed with weather and it is going to be linking weather with your home devices.
So it would seem to me then that if that's where we are heading, and it is, then there is a part to play across the continent. So it's probably not just Ireland that you're balancing off and trading. So and we do rely on kind of energy coming from Scandinavia, from across the UK. Does that all feed into this?
Totally. And it's interesting because we trade in Ireland, UK, France, Netherlands and Belgium. So Netherlands, great example. Last year, they've installed a huge amount of rooftop solar, but more solar than their demand. So we were actually seeing prices at the day ahead of minus 400, minus. So you got paid if you consumed because there was too much sun on the system. Now, really what you should have done in practice is everybody plugs in their EVs to consume that. And that's why we're in transition at the moment, where they haven't got the technology totally correct to sync it in. And Ireland's actually leading the space in terms of smart grids, in terms of the installation of smart meters relative to Germany and other countries, but also our smart tariffs and the infrastructure for what we're doing. So everything's going to change in the next couple of years, and it's quite exciting.
Right. I reckon they're all on their bikes. That's probably why they're not plugging in EVs over in Ireland. Well, that all sounds very exciting. Still a little bit scary now, I'll be honest with you, from my perspective, because I don't know how all that works. But it sounds to me like there's a lot of juggling going on, but it's now in a very controlled way, with none of the trying to guess what's coming ahead. It's much more planned. And that has to be good for the price that consumers pay in the end.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay. Now, so Fergus, talk to me then about, Chloe's kind of presented a very exciting future there and, you know, what we can expect out of this new world of smart grids. But talk to me about where we're at now, because households in Ireland will know that the smart meter programme is rolling out. I got mine last year. I'm very happy with it. 1.5 million households have got a smart meter now, and it is rolling out, and it's free of charge. It only takes 15 minutes to fit. However, only a tiny fraction of people seem to have moved to a smart tariff with their energy provider. So do you think it's that people lack the knowledge, they're not engaging, or they don't understand how it all works?
I think all three. I think it is complex, you know, so we need smart meters to enable this, you know, brave new world that Chloe talked about, where we can get everything operating in sync and, you know, in concert with each other. So I think we're at, I was looking at figures yesterday, I think we're at 1.6 million smart meters now in Irish homes. And by the end of the year, every Irish homes, give or take, will have a smart meter. And you know, there's, I suppose, the immediate benefit is you can get data from these meters yourself. You can log on to an ESB networks portal and you can pull down your data. If you're into data, you can really understand where and when you're using energy or electricity in your home. So that's the first benefit, whether you go for a tariff or not. And I think that the challenge for consumers at the moment, so only of those 1.6 million meters, I think only 10%, 160,000 people have moved to a smart tariff.
There has been some negative connotation applied to this market, which is fully deregulated. And some of the providers reserve quite expensive tariffs for their smart tariff because it assumes you're not going to use it between 5 and 7 in the evening. You're not going to use it between 7 and 9 in the morning. And in fact, when people do, they get you know, a higher price for it. Do you think that there's more education we can do with people around smart tariffs? Maybe do people think just having the smart meter fitted is enough? They don't have to take any action?
Yeah, I think there's a fundamental, yeah, educational piece that needs to happen. So you can extract a huge amount of value from your use of electricity if you can be flexible with it. And to be flexible with it, you need to understand what you're using, when you're using it, and if that can move. Does that have to be at 5 o'clock? Can you actually move? And there are certain amounts of loads that are pretty easy to move. And obviously energy storage might come into that. And we get into that in a little bit, in a little while. So initially, when the smart tariffs came in, each supplier was obliged to offer a certain amount of them. And I think there was legitimate concern because some of them didn't look like good value. And when you put them against existing kind of home load profiles, they were showing as an increase in pricing. That's kind of flipped now in the last 12 months and the smart tariffs being offered. But there's just such a fundamental thing here, which is you can't just say, this is the way I use electricity. I'm going to switch to a smart tariff and I'm going to save money. The reason the smart tariffs are dynamic and they have these different things is they offer you an opportunity to change your behavior to save money. So it's a combination of moving to a tariff not that suits your current energy demand pattern, but that suits an energy demand pattern that you can
do. That you can work around. Yeah. And I must say, since I moved to mine and started actually interrogating the kind of stuff that comes to me every month to say, look at your usage and here's where it's being used. It does work because I won't put on appliances now between 5 and 7. The dishwasher stays off, the washing machine stays off because that now I may want to still cook and that's fine, but it's kind of just shifting because it doesn't matter to me when the dishes are cleaned, you know, and it might as well be 9 o'clock at night as any other time. So you can shift behaviour, but first and foremost, you need that knowledge, don't you?
Yeah, and I think, look, we can expect homeowners and citizens to gain a certain amount of knowledge. They will become more familiar with this. I think even campaigns like from ESB Networks about beating the peak and, you know, like that ability to kind of communicate with people, simple messages, you know, there's a pinch point on the grid tonight. Would you mind not running that thing between 5 and 7?
And will people, do you think, be able to get these messages automatically? I mean, at the moment, there isn't really a mechanism for that, apart from ads on the television or on the radio. So, but, you know, like, will there be a mechanism maybe in the home or on your app that'll ping at you?
Well, this is the fundamental thing. So at the moment, it's a little bit choice-based. It's a bit manual, shall we say. You need to decide that you're going to charge your EV at 2 a.m.
Now, of course, it requires the user to be smart, never mind the meter.
Yeah. So of course, you don't have to get up at 2 a.m. and plug your EV in. Like your charger will allow you to schedule, your car will allow you to schedule the charge. But so there's simple automation steps that people are taking at the moment. Where we're going in the future, those decisions need to be made automatically. So just again, to use the EV as an example, you plug your EV and you say, I just want my EV to charge for 3 hours tonight. And that'll give me an extra 150 kilometers, say, would be typical from a 3 hour charge. So I just want my EV to charge for 3 hours tonight. You actually don't care what 3 hours it charges in because you're asleep. But the grid really cares. There will be periods during the night where it's most optimal for you from a cost perspective and most optimal for the grid from a balancing perspective for you to charge. And that might mean it charges at midnight for an hour, at 2 a.m. for an hour, and at 5 a.m. for an hour. Or it might mean it does it all from 2 to 5 a.m. It just depends on the dynamic situation at the time. You can't decide that. So the future is systems that decide these things for you, and you're rewarded financially by getting the lowest cost.
For letting it.
Yeah, for getting the lowest cost and also by offering flexibility to the grid.
Well, let's talk to somebody now who is living in that future. Chloe, you are leading a pilot project on this very thing.
Yes.
So I'm fascinated to learn, what does your home look like, your life look like, you know, how do you manage all of this?
So we got an SEI R&D grant actually to demonstrate how this is going to work. So I live in Sutton.
In County Dublin?
In County Dublin with my husband. So it's just the two of us.
So it's a regular urban house?
Yeah, it's a regular urban house. We've neighbours either side of us. We don't have a huge amount of space in the garden. So it's not a big space undertaking. Ultimately, we've solar panels on the roof, east-west of the roof. So we're not even south-facing, we're east-west. We've put a lot of batteries in our shed to test long-duration storage. So we could probably run the house for 2 days on batteries. I have an EV. I have a switch on the immersion for hot water. And basically, this is a demonstration project. We're going to feed in a price of electricity every 30 minutes to an optimizer. And it's going to schedule everything in the home based on optimal price to try and minimize bills, to try and minimize costs. And we're going to run it for about a year to see, turn off optimizer and turn on optimizer. What's the benefit? Financial benefit. And really exciting. It's just at the starting stage of this project.
So Chloe, in your day-to-day life, what are you doing anything differently, or are you just going about your business every day from when you get up in the morning? How does this change what you do?
So this will run in the background, but how it works is, say for instance, if we're forecasting for a week out, okay, and Wednesday it's supposed to be particularly windy at night, really, really windy. The expectation is then the price could be zero in the wholesale market. So then the optimizer box will kick in and say, automatically charge your car on Wednesday night because it's really, really cheap. So it will do the decisions for us on the basis of forecasting every half hour of the grid and out where the prices are going to be and what's the optimum time to run things.
Is there a lot of infrastructure involved in people's homes? Because they might be worried, look, my home is full enough with all the stuff that I have day to day without putting in batteries in the shed. I mean, what will it look like for ordinary people?
For this, you could just put it in your attic. So it started off with your attic. So the reason, because I'm demonstrating things at the moment, I thought I'd put it in the shed to test this. But in theory, the way I'd see things going is, if you fast forward, let's say 10 years, okay, and let's say everybody has kind of graduated towards EVs, okay, when EVs come to the end of their kind of life, those batteries are still probably good, but not good for driving around in. So where I'd see things in the future is those batteries will come out of your car and go into a home battery. And that's kind of what Tesla Powerwall and different people are doing, is in they're taking batteries that aren't good for one particular thing because they're not efficient, but they're still okay.
They still have a life cycle.
They still have a life cycle. Okay. Yeah, they would go into, let's say, a house battery, and now you could charge appliances in the home. Also, in time, vehicles that you buy, the EVs, could give back power to the grid. So you could, if the system is under stress, you could give power back to the grid and get paid for that.
Yeah, and we saw in the last budget and the one before that, there was some moves made by government to try and encourage people to give, to at least set up a scenario whereby people could earn money out of this. Now, I don't know that anybody's actually earning any amount up to now, but I think the plan is that if you generate more than you need, you sell it back into the grid and you can get a couple of quid to tax-free to supplement your income.
And that currently is there. So like if anybody has solar on their system and they're in work, so they're not using their solar, they are getting paid for their excess power currently.
So everybody then, Fergus, has a part to play here. I mean, nobody's going to be escaping this or getting out of it, and nor should they want to. So Chloe's presented us with the future that this is all going to be beautifully integrated into all our homes with batteries in the attic. And I presume when you have buildings like apartment blocks, this can all be centralised anyway. And we've spoken about district heating in the past in our last episodes. You can check that out, folks. And you can see where it's all headed. What actions can people take right now to get involved in this? Apart from educating themselves, yeah, which I think we're all going to have to do.
So educate yourself. And there's good material out there. You know, we're putting together an information hub on our website, which will be up shortly. And then there's stuff on the Commission for Regulation of Utilities website, and your supplier will have information about what your smart meter means. I think understand your electricity demand is an important one. The fundamental thing that you're talking about is we're homeowners are going to be rewarded to shift from being a passive user of electricity to an active user of electricity. How much they have to do that manually at the moment, there's a reasonable amount of intervention. Ultimately, there will be a box in your home that can manage all this sort of stuff for you, you know? So understand where and when you're using your electricity, and then can you actually move any of that? Like what of it is flexible? So you talked about your dishwasher or your tumble dryer. They are flexible loads that you can move to times that suit you best from a cost perspective. So don't just think this is my electricity demand pattern, it doesn't change. A lot of it can change. And then look at the smart tariffs that are available. By the end of the year, I think there's going to be every supplier will have to offer maybe another 6 smart tariffs, including...
Now, let me stop you there, because this is exactly the kind of thing that confuses people.
Of course,
so they hop on a comparison website and they go and look at the smart tariffs. Why do you need 6 of anything? I mean, look, you know, would it not make a whole heap of more sense just to have one thing and this is the cheapest thing for you? Because how will I know as an ordinary consumer if I've 6 smart tariffs, which one to go for?
Yeah, so at the moment, this is the big challenge, right? So, the ultimate smart tariff is what we would call a full dynamic or time of use tariff. So every half hour to be a different price for electricity. That's the way the market is. That's if you had full transparency true to the electricity system, that's the way it would be. And some of them exist in the UK at the moment, but we haven't got anything like that here. At the moment, a lot of the tariffs are sort of advertised kind of on a lifestyle basis. So, and that will probably, because that kind of cuts through a little bit of the noise. So it kind of, are you an EV driver? This is likely the best one for you. Do you have a heat pump? This is likely the best one for you. You know, they'll have a family lifestyle one. They'll have a working from home one. It's those type of language that people use.
Well, but if they stuck to that language, I think people would be a lot more likely to use it. But I find that the language around energy, you know, the kilowatts per hour and the MPRN and all this stuff, like it's almost designed to confuse. So would you be in favour then of having a system where maybe the suppliers are told, listen, you have to approach people the way they are going to read this, because this is not the only thing that's going to consume their day. Yeah. Would it help to have that in kind of defined, simple language as you've outlined?
Yeah, I think where we're going is suppliers will have to offer you the most optimum tariff for your needs. So if you have 2 or 3 years of data of your energy use, and if you're just asked a couple of questions like, you know, do you have an EV? Could you change your use of your appliances in a different way? Could you, you know, how often are you home? Simple questions to try and understand a user's patterns. You could probably very quickly be offered the optimum. They'd look at your data and say, well, on that basis, we've applied every tariff we have. Tom, Dick and Harry has been applied to this. And actually, this tariff gives you the lowest running costs.
So you might have an entirely different tariff from your next door neighbour.
Absolutely.
Based on how you live your life and what you do.
Exactly. And that's the challenge. Yeah. Everybody is different.
Yeah.
So some people have a fully electrified home with solar and they're producing a lot in the middle of the day and exporting a little bit. And then they're plugging in their EV at night and they're running a heat pump. And the person next door might not have any of those technologies and is just really using electricity to run appliances and is still on a gas boiler and doesn't have an electric car and doesn't have solar. So everybody's very, very different. Mm. So that's where, you know, we have to cut through that decision making. At the moment, it does take a little bit of thought. And I completely agree with you. I think it is confusing. And clearly it is when only 10% of people have taken up a smart tariff. So they're not seeing that there's sort of gold in them there hills. Yeah. But there is, you know, my smart tariff at night is roughly about 8 times cheaper than my daytime tariff. Mm. So like the benefit for me, it costs me nothing to run my EV, about 15 quid a month.
And listen, I know people instinctively know that running stuff at night is cheaper than running it during the day. I like, they have that kind of cognitive ability, but it's about the precision of it. And they're kind of saying, well, I don't live during the night. I have to do this stuff during the day. Yeah. But maybe they don't have to do it at 5 p.m. They can do it at 4 p.m. or 9 p.m.
Exactly.
And it's those tweaks, really, rather than completely fundamentally changing your life.
There's certain things like you can't recommend someone run their tumble dryer at night while they're asleep. They're obviously tumble dryers create a fire risk. So you can't tell people to do certain things at night. You can't cook in the middle of the night, you know. My dad joked to me recently,
he said, you probably don't have teenagers at home then, do you?
But my dad joked to me recently when he signed up to a smart tariff and he said, we're going to get up at 9 p.m. Yeah. and live during the night. And then we're going to go to bed at 9 a.m. because it's going to be so cheap for us. So yeah, it is. It creates a different dynamic, but there's only so much manual intervention that's possible. And,
yeah.
and ultimately, the more that this is automated, then consumers don't have to make a choice. They literally don't have to make a choice. Like Chloe's presented a world there where your heat pump will look at the following day and it will decide, do you know what? I need to run for 4 hours to keep your home comfortable. I'm going to figure out the best 4 hours to run. Mm. Not you. You're not going to have to do anything. And I'm going to do that in a way that is beneficial for you because it's cheapest. And it's beneficial to the grid because it won't put pressure during those times of high price, which is when the grid is under pressure.
Well, Chloe, you're kind of living it now. You're doing it so we don't have to just yet.
Yeah.
What are you hoping to find at the end of, say, this year or 2 year period?
To be honest, I'm interested to see what's the saving with and without on an optimizer. Because even for the battery side at the moment, we've spent money on the batteries. I want to see is it worthwhile getting batteries into the home or not. Also, because we trade in the market, I'm trying to linking it into when's the system under stress and could, if you aggregated a whole load of houses or a whole load of demand, how that could actually help the system as a whole. And so big things for me is to look at costs and actually see what the saving is, because nobody will do it unless there's a saving, to see how it could basically keep more wind maybe on the system and to use it more optimally and see how it could be aggregated across like multiple sites.
It does actually all sound very futuristic, very brave new world. If everybody has this in place by, I don't know what the time scale is for this, but probably 2035, what will the landscape look like? What are we all doing? How will it look if all this goes ahead?
Yeah, so I guess we're moving towards a highly electrified future. So every home or a lot of homes we would expect will have a heat pump, electric source of heat. We'll have an EV in the driveway or in the car park underneath the apartment building. We'll may have solar on the roof, may have storage within the home. And effectively, what needs to happen is that all of that distributed bits of demand, which can operate flexibly, needs to be aggregated together and matched with weather-dependent renewables. So whether it's coming from wind or from solar, and that will best maximise our indigenous renewable resource. That will best balance our grid and keep it secure and stable so we have good electricity supply. And that will kind of best help with reducing emissions.
And best of all, we won't even know what's happening.
Well, that's the bit that kind of freaks people out a little bit about smart meters. You know, like you could look at a smart meter profile and tell a lot about a person and about their family. You know, that's what's very, very interesting about it. But ultimately, it should be completely seamless.
Is there anything to worry about here from a data point of view?
Well, it is your data and it's protected in the same way that any data is protected. I mean, the main thing is you own it. It's your data. So you have to give consent to a new supplier to access that data or a third party who might be coming in and kind of acting as an aggregator. So, you know, nobody's coming banging on your door saying, we own this data now, forget about it. It is your data. It's personal data.
That has been a really interesting and next frontier level stuff from this conversation on smart grids and smart networks from Chloe and Fergus, both of whom I thank for explaining that in such accessible language to us all. And thanks to you for listening. And please do make sure you tune in next week when we take 5 minutes to answer your most popular questions on this topic. In the meantime, check in with your electricity provider regarding the different tariffs available. You could perhaps financially benefit by switching to a different provider or a different tariff and changing your behaviour in the home. That's been the 180 Degrees podcast. Please like and subscribe and share to make sure you catch all of the episodes. If you've enjoyed this episode of the 180 Degrees podcast, well then why not review and subscribe to it now? And of course, share it with family and friends to find out more about renewables and energy. Well then, check out seai.ie.